Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
This is a totally different job than he took 7 years ago.
Pete Thamel.
The only surprise of going off the rails is Dan mentioned a book and he didn't write it.
I did not.
With SI's Pat Forty.
With Harbaugh, he's such a prideful guy that it's probably more like, hey, you basically pushed me in a corner and tried to run me out. And then I showed how good I can be here, and I'm ticked off.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. National championship game is here upon us. Alabama, Georgia, two best teams, heading to Indianapolis Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Although, it's probably like 8:27 or something.
Yeah.
They're liars.
Whenever ESPN runs out of promo material and advertisements, they'll get around to kickoff.
It's like trying to ascertain when a boxing match is actually going to begin. It's like, well, they're monitoring the pay-per-view sales. So, they got to get everybody in. Like, that's a lie. I don't believe the kick will be at 8. Sully, you love World Cup soccer. You love soccer. Mm-hmm. One thing I love about soccer is when the game says it's going to start at 8, damn thing starts at 8:00.
That's right. And it ends in 2 hours and unless there's extra time.
There's a couple minutes that end thing is weird. But yeah. It starts when it says it's going to start. They do all the rigmarole before, all of that. Line up, get your pictures, anthems, whatever.
Prompt.
This? I don't know. All right. So we're going to get to that game. Kind of a big game.
Kind of a big
game. Also got the FCS title game, ESPN2 at noon. Montana State for North Dakota State. I'm hearing all these SEC fans complaining about how cold it's going to be, and they're bitter because the cold guys are going to Frisco, Texas. This thing should be played in like an oil patch in like Williston, something like that, North
Williston,
Dakota.
Williston, North Dakota. There you go, baby. Do it. On a absolutely frozen oil patch.
In the shadows of Mount Rushmore, we bring you. The FCS title game.
That's South Dakota.
Yeah, I know.
The shadows of Canada.
I've been to both Dakotas. I've never been
to the South Dakota. I'm one Dakota. I'm a North Dakota guy. I read a good book about Williston, the Good Hand. It's about this guy who became an oil field worker. If you're like bored because college football's about to end, it's an excellent book.
All right.
I mean, it's great memoir. This dude is, just brutal. Worst work you could possibly imagine. Out there freezing. Trying to get oil out of North Dakota. Anyways, we're off the rails. I'm doing great.
Katie Ledecky's family from Williston, North Dakota, in case you need it.
Really?
Yep.
A lot of pools up there. I'm thinking not.
Yeah. It's where her mom grew up in North Dakota.
Okay. There you go.
The only surprise of going off the rails is Dan mentioned a book and he didn't write it.
I did not. It's a hell of a book. This is... if you're going to buy a book, buy mine.
Yeah. It's no Epic Athletes, but it's a very good book.
If you've exhausted all of my purchases, you can move on to The Good Hand.
Did you get a good Christmas spike on Epic Athletes, Dan? Get a good holiday bump?
I don't know. The book industry is not really up. The up-to-date data is not really up.
Yeah.
You literally get paid like virtually like 6 months late after everything. So
Yeah,
we're working on it. It's quite an industry. All right, much quicker, transfer portal. Let's start with a couple news items before we get to these title games.
There you go.
Caleb Williams has left Oklahoma, massive free agent, came in, expected to sit behind Spencer Rattler, who's also already left. Nobody's staying in Oklahoma, I don't believe. And obviously Rattler struggled this year. Caleb came in during the Red River shootout and assumed the starting job the last 7 games. Huge deal. Big tumult on opt-outs and transfer portal. This one has, upset some people. I certainly get Oklahoma fans who are troubled by it, but what are you going to do? I don't know. Thoughts on this, Pat?
A big one. Big name in the portal. I don't blame him. I perfectly understand it. I mean, this is a guy that came to play for Lincoln Riley. Played for Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley left. Dan, as you put it, and I had the temerity to retweet it. He was following the example set by his school and his head coach and finding an opportunity he deemed to be better. So it'd be fascinating to see where this ends up. If he does go to USC, wow, he got him and Jackson Dart, at least for the moment. You never know if then maybe Jackson Dart looks to move as the musical chairs keeps going, but it's big. It's very big. I'm interested in you guys' thoughts on whether Oklahoma is in a better place now than they were in July, because I don't think they are. And boy, do Oklahoma fans disagree with me on that. They think that it's fine to lose your head coach, all of your quarterbacks, two of your receivers, your 2023 five-star quarterback, et cetera. And you're fine. You're not just fine. You're better. So
the Caleb Williams piece of this has been really, really interesting to me in a lot of ways. Like, it's the most interesting story looming over the sport right now, because he's really going to end up indicative, and Dan wrote a good column about it, of this era of free agency that we're in. You know, I've talked to his dad, Carl, a couple times as they're moving forward here. And I think 10 years from now, we'll remember Caleb Williams as being a transformative figure in the shift to players having the power now, or players getting a lot more power than they've ever have. I mean, these schools are like lining up, trying to see what they can do to lure Caleb Williams to go to school there. And it's a really fascinating dynamic. And I think there's a strong aura of mystery where he's going to end up. Carl Williams has told me that they're wide open right now. They don't have a destination plan. And the most pivotal part of what they're looking for in terms of a place is training for the NFL. They feel like, and if you really dial in on how many college football coaching staffs have NFL specific quarterback training available, there's only a handful, right? There's not a lot of programs that fit that criteria. So you're narrowing it down to the Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, UCLA, Texas. I'm going to miss a few. Obviously, USC, can't argue with what Lincoln's done with there, but they want an offense that looks like what he'll do starting in 2024 in the league. And so it's just interesting to see that power shift. And it's interesting to see how much, you know, they will be able to control what they do and where they go.
Yeah, look, this is about business. Caleb Williams is in the quarterback business. It's always the inherent conflict of college athletics, or any athletics, is how do you, any pro athletics too, because fans want a guy to stay and the players want to make as much money as they possibly can. And it's just you have an emotional attachment to a team. They may not. If you're Caleb Williams and you're his family, and they have done this from the start, as Pete has reported throughout, this is about how do I get to the league? I think in one of your stories, Pete, Carl Williams' dad said, look, the difference between the number one pick and the 15th pick is $20 million. And that's if you don't even pan out. Caleb Williams projects to be a top five pick in a couple of years. If he is good, he projects to get one of these second quarterback contracts, which, like last year, Josh Allen signed one that could be worth $258 million. It's $150 million guaranteed dollars for Josh Allen. Real good player, but we're not even talking Mahomes.
Right.
Right? Mahomes got $500 million coming, potentially. Right? You're talking generations of wealth laying on what happens in the next few years, not just the two to get you drafted, but how prepared are you going in? Will you get that second contract? I mean, you're talking tens of millions right away, and then hundreds of millions in the next 7 years. Of course you're going to be like, that matters more than just about anything. Oh, you got to play for the love of the team. Nobody who ever said that had hundreds of millions of dollars laying on the line. And so for Caleb Williams, he goes to Oklahoma because of Lincoln Riley. He didn't grow up in Oklahoma City, grew up in Washington, D.C. He didn't go to Oklahoma to watch the sunset over the oil fields, okay? All this, didn't want to ride around the Sooner schooner. Like,
he
all
didn't
those
grow
are
up
benefits.
Knowing all four words to the Sooner fight song. Sooner, Sooner.
They did keep it simple. They do keep it simple. So when his coach leaves, you go, well, you're look, he's got a great situation. He's a starting quarterback at Oklahoma, right? On the list of like great things to be, the star freshman quarterback at Oklahoma is very high on the human race scale of like your upper, like great experiences. You know what's even better? Being the star quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys at 27, making $250 million.
Correct.
So you can't equated. Of course he's going to follow. He's and he goes in the portal and says, hey, he can't just guarantee, look, we just, Brent Venables, great coach, the defensive coordinator from Clemson. I don't know, right? You don't know. Like, he should listen. And it's just money, and it sucks as a fan. I get it. Everybody who's been a fan of college, but certainly in pro sports, you sit there and, you know, you watch these guys come, and then they go to the highest bidder, right? They leave for the Yankees. They leave for the Dodgers. They leave for whatever. They leave for the Lakers. And you're like, you know, LeBron James goes to Miami. They burn all his stuff. Then he comes back, and they all love him, right? It sucks. It hurts. And it's not great for the game. And pro sports try to do everything they can to minimize that. You can offer more money if you're re-signing them. You can start negotiations earlier, right? You could keep Josh Allen by offering a deal now. So he would have to risk going into that final season and get injured. So they do stuff to minimize this. College football has none of that, except for you can only transfer once. But that's where we're at. I don't know what to say more on that. You can say more on that, but I would ask this, maybe back to either of you. If you were Caleb Williams, where would you go?
USC makes a lot of sense, I think. And they've made it very clear that they are not afraid of competition. Jackson Dart's a really good quarterback, maybe potentially a great one. But when he went to and bumped out Spencer Rattler with the help of Rattler underperforming, it showed that they're like, you know, we think Caleb's going to be the best quarterback on any roster he's going to be on. So if you want to go play for a guy who has tutored quarterbacks who are starting in the NFL and were number one picks, and you want to play in a place where you are going to get a lot of exposure and the NIL opportunities could be through the roof, hard to top USC, in my opinion. I mean, that's a lot right there that fits what they are looking for. If he is in the business of being a quarterback, that would make USC, to me, very hard to beat.
I think that there's really, in a perfect world, for what Carl Williams wants, you'd go to Alabama. And that's assuming Bill O'Brien sticks around. Now, I was stunned Bill O'Brien didn't get more traction in the last coaching carousel. When you look at some of the coaches that were hired at pretty good jobs, I think, and we've talked about this on the pod a little bit, I think Bill O'Brien's resume and what he's accomplished far outweighs pretty much every coach who was hired in this cycle, quite frankly. But obviously, you have a little traffic in front of you there with that pesky Heisman winner and Bryce Young sitting in front of you in the quarterback room. But if what Carl Williams wants purely is development, I would argue that is the best place to go if you want to be developed for that. Now, playing is a huge part of development. And then from there, like it's not an easy question. The destination is going to depend on the relationship between the family and Lincoln Riley and whether that got frayed with his departure. I agree with Pat. Like that is, in terms of if you are the player responsible for getting USC going again, that's going to be a huge, you know, huge, huge thing. Think about Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush are still household names and they're on television because of it. Like if they had gone to Cal, they would not be household names right now. There's a power to locking the USC brand with success again. People are dying for USC to be good. Just like people were waiting for Notre Dame to come back. People are waiting now for Miami to come back. Like college football is the nostalgia business. And we all want to feel the same feelings of these programs winning. And USC is on the cusp of feeling some nostalgia again. So I do think like it is really hard to argue with Lincoln Riley's pedigree in terms of turning out guys who could win the Heisman and be number one picks. But you could dig in a little bit and say, does that offense really translate up? And how much does it translate up? And one thing I know I've learned about scheme in college football is that you have to know what you don't know. And there's a certain point where I can't sit here and dial in on, okay, that's a pro read and that's a college read and stuff like that. There's stuff that's always going to be over our heads. But it would be really interesting to take a study on his offense and how it translates up and how prepared Kyler Murray was and how prepared Baker Mayfield was. And these guys who've obviously, Jalen Hurts, you know, have gone through there and really grown and flourished under Lincoln. And so I guess the missing ingredient there is that last transferable part. And I will just fully admit that's a pinch over my very limited football intellectual threshold. Although my general intellectual threshold is very limited too. So it is a pretty good conundrum because if you have to make a list of college coaches, coordinators, quarterback coaches with NFL transferable experience, it's a list of less than 10.
It's fascinating issue, right? I totally agree. Like, where do you go? Like, the most obvious one to me, and I don't think he'd go there, and I'm not sure he should, but is Michigan. Jim Harbaugh was a 15-year NFL quarterback, and he coached Alex Smith in the pros. He took Colin Kaepernick to the Super Bowl. He coached and recruited Andrew Luck. He has not had the great quarterback at Michigan. The stunner of all stunners on Michigan was, I thought, we time warp back 7 years when Jim Harbaugh gets that job. I'm like, oh, the quarterback's going to line up to play for him. It's Michigan. Tom Brady's alma mater, right? They've had a greasy, all these guys have come through. Never really had it. I don't, you know, and they've got two pretty good ones right now, and J.J. McCarthy could be really good. But there's a guy who's, I mean, what resume more do you want than that? He's literally been playing quarterback his whole life. He survived 15 years in the NFL, not as a super talented quarterback, but as this guy who managed. You know, do you sit there and what about Chip Kelly, right? Chip Kelly coached in the NFL. You're out in L.A. I don't know. Do you want to play? What about like Tony Elliott at Virginia? He had Trevor Lawrence. He had Deshaun Watson, right? Now he's the head coach of Virginia. You're going to step right in there, but you're also not going to have any receiver room like you had at Oklahoma or you'd have at Alabama, which I don't think he's going to Alabama, or Ohio State if he wanted to go there. I don't think if I'm Ohio State, that's scary because you're throwing a bomb into your locker room saying, well, we got CJ's our guy. Everything's looking good for Ohio State. Like, how much better is he than CJ Stroud? Maybe he's a little bit better, but is that worth angering everybody or whatever? I don't know.
Dan, to double down on your Michigan point, I think the Stroud point carries up. Like, Michigan won this year for a lot of reasons. One of them was togetherness and juju and locker room unity. Like, that place was aligned, you know, new staff, new energy, locked and loaded. You bring in Caleb Williams, you could send two pretty darn good quarterbacks to the portal. And then do you alienate the locker room? And do you give up some of those good vibes? And that's where we, that's kind of where we are. And that's what these head coaches who are looking at Caleb Williams have to decide. And here's my last point on the Williamses, and I apologize for butting in, is this is a little bit like this period of college football. Now, the title game's going to be great on Monday. We're all excited about it. We're going to dig into it later. But the Caleb Williams thing reminds me a little bit of NBA free agency, where people care more where LeBron James is going to go than they do about the NBA regular season. Like, this Caleb Williams story has sucked up an enormous amount of oxygen in this news cycle. It, to me, there's some parallels to the intrigue because, look, Alabama's playing Georgia, and that's great, and those fan bases care, and people in the Southeast are going to care. But the Caleb Williams story, there's a lot more interconnectivity, and that's why it's been such a big story. Oh, could he go to SC? Oh, would Clemson take him? Oh, is Notre Dame a spot? Is Michigan a spot? Like, what Ohio? Like, there's more connectivity and more juice to the story and more intrigue to the story because there's potential ripples at so many different places. And I really do feel like the power is shifting to the athlete. We're seeing the power shift to the athlete, and we're seeing it in the news cycle. This Caleb Williams story is a huge national story.
100%. And I, as someone who's covered a number of NBA finals, and covered the ones where LeBron was in, and it was like, is he walking out the last time of Cleveland? Like, it because the free agency's right after. The NBA finals end on Father's Day, and free agency's July 1st. So it does overwhelm even an NBA final, especially when it gets like 3-1 on a series or something like that. No, I agree with you. And then so there's two other aspects to this. Like, if you want to make the biggest splash to me in terms of attention, potential legendary status, I'd go to Notre Dame. Notre Dame's really good, but they need Caleb Williams, right? And it's a huge brand, and you got the whole thing, and they're going to open the season to Ohio State. Like, holy cow, go to Notre Dame. You may not get the, we're going to promise you this NIL money, but the long play, that's the short cash. The long play money, I would go to Notre Dame. Do you want to play? Like, one of the things I talked about, Josh Allen, Ben Roethlisberger is just ending a career. Jared Goff's still playing. Like, a lot of these guys that got a lot of reps in college football are the ones that still do well in the NFL. And because they learn a lot, right? Like, Josh Allen played at Wyoming. They were never any good. So what? He's really good now. He learned how to play football.
That's right. You got to sit behind Hendon Hooker.
Yeah. Or
you gonna get him some ribs, Sully, from the groomer's rib joint there?
You're ready for that. Mm-hmm. You're ready for that, Sully. I mean, I don't know. Those are all the different. Like, again, do you go to Virginia because this guy's got a track? I don't know. Does he have a track record? Is that how you see Tony Elliott or not? Do you go to, like, what do you want to do? There's so many variables. It's such a wild deal. And so people just screaming it's going to be this or that. Like, I don't feel bad for the, I mean, this is good problems to have, right? It's a much bigger decision than, and it's not an obvious decision on where to go. Pat?
Right. No, I agree. I mean, you guys made a lot of compelling points for a lot of different places. I guess the window, you know, if we have to bring up the pesky academics here, you know, he wants to be enrolled, I would think, for the winter semester or spring semester, whatever the hell we're in now. So
L O L.
Well, I mean,
like, even Stanford, even your beloved Stanford or Notre Dame, be like, we got a spot for you.
You can't really show up in February, okay? I don't think you can show up in February.
But is Stanford on the quarter system still, Pat?
Yeah, Stanford started.
Yeah. So just skip the first quarter. You're not going to miss any spring ball.
You can find a school on quarters. You could skip the first quarter.
Professor 40, apparently.
I'm thinking from an actual eligibility standpoint. You can't go and practice with the team in spring practice if you're not enrolled in school. That's the point.
I will say this. It would be hysterical if a player, like, this huge thing, and then he just becomes ineligible because he missed, like, associate. Like, there was really a professor still out there.
Yeah. Well, I think, but there is an admissions office.
What was the last guy at Stanford or Notre Dame as good as the? And I do believe those two schools try harder than anybody else to have some balance. What was the last one that was academically ineligible?
Oh, there's been some. They don't announce it really anymore. They just say so and so is not eligible to play this semester quarter, or is taking this quarter off, or is transferring suddenly to somewhere else.
Anyway, go ahead.
But not like you literally have to enroll in school. I'm not saying he's not going to get good enough grades, but you do have to enroll.
You do have to go to the school. Maybe. Yeah.
Well, no one's going to argue with the enrollment argument. Yes, you must be enrolled.
Online class.
Shows Burrow up at practice. Can I get a jersey?
Didn't Burrow just take everything online? Online, whatever. Yeah, well, it's good. Don't care.
Burrow was a fifth-year senior, but.
Yeah, that's true. All right. This is going to be wild, big deal, obviously. And then Dylan Gabriel bails on UCLA to jump to OU, which is funny.
That was, in a span of 19 days, he went from UCF to UCLA to Oklahoma. And, Caleb Williams, like, the send button on Caleb's Twitter thing to announce that he was leaving wasn't even cold yet before Dylan Gabriel was taking his spot.
All right, so Pat, your question.
He already had a video done too, which I thought was pretty interesting. Like that was ready to rip.
We'll talk more Oklahoma and where they are, because I think they're one of the most fascinating programs, and Brent Venables is the most fascinating positions of all. But we got a long offseason, and we got to get this little title game thing. Also, big deal. Bruce Feldman reports Jim Harbaugh could be interested in the going back to the NFL. One of these great, throw out the flyer. I trust that report 100%. A, he's always interested in going back to the NFL. B, it's been a couple days. He hasn't said a peep. Even coaches that are trying to get back to the NFL usually put something out going, oh, no, I would never leave Michigan, right? We will see. But what are your thoughts on, does Harbaugh, after 7 years in Ann Arbor, does he say, hey, look, I want to go, what are your thoughts? What is the chances that Jim Harbaugh wins the Big Ten for the first time since 2004 in Ann Arbor, beats Ohio State, gets to a playoff, 4-10 win season, and says, I'm out of here. I'm going back to coach the Bears, which I used to play for, or I'm going to Vegas and coach the Raiders or whatever's up.
Yeah, I mean, I was in South Florida with Michigan and obviously against Georgia down there, and there was some talk about it there, and people thought that this is legitimate interest, that he might have been a little bit more chapped by having his salary slashed than he ever let on, that he did not really like that arrangement, but didn't want to walk away from Michigan, didn't have a whole lot of other options, so he wrote it out. And, some people say this could be a leverage play to get back all of that money and then some, but I do think that with Harbaugh, he's such a prideful guy that it's probably more like, hey, you basically pushed me in a corner and tried to run me out, And then I showed how good I can be here, and I'm ticked off. And I do think he would not mind coaching again in the NFL. He was good at it. Got that close to winning a Super Bowl. Boy, that's got to leave that taste in your mouth, man. So it would not shock me. Now, I would also say this. If he does go, I mean, Michigan would be a super attractive job, but I think they like their in-house people. I think they like Josh Gattis, and I think they like Mike Hart, who does not have a coordinator title, but was a beloved Michigan player who came in and is apparently a real, like, program force. He was a real positive influence at Indiana. He went back to Michigan. People really thought he had a big impact there as well. So I think Michigan feels like even if they lose him, they may have some people in-house. They may look at other people as well, but I think they like their in-house candidates.
Yeah, I would think they'd have to go outside if Harbaugh did leave. I would think that Matt Campbell would be the obvious choice. And I know he might not be scorching hot after 7-6 or whatever they finished up. You know, they underwhelmed this season, certainly. But just his resonance in the Midwest and head coaching experience, I would think. But maybe the Marcus Freeman promotion becomes a bit of a trend here. If Michigan did open now, they'd have a huge advantage in that they'd have the market to themselves. So they wouldn't have to rush. They could take their time. They could really go be deliberate and see who wants that. See who wants that job. I do think, despite the Ohio State ties, Luke Fickell would be an attractive candidate there. He's the best Group of Five coach on the board right now, and he obviously just authored a historic season. And there is some laundry issues, if you will, because of the rivalry and the side of it that he was on, but I would think that, err on the side of experience there if that did happen. But will Harbaugh leave? I don't know. I mean, Dan, you said in your column, I thought you said it really well, like, no one can predict what Jim Harbaugh is going to do. Nobody knows. He's just a aloof, bizarre guy who keeps to himself a little bit. And he's always been very difficult to, other than when he, like, went scorched earth on the 49ers and wanted to get fired. That was the only obvious point of his career. But I really think that he's been there, what, 8 years now?
Seven
years now. And that's a long time for Jim Harbaugh to have stayed anywhere in his
never been anywhere in, longer than four.
Yeah. In his coaching career. So, and he's 58, he's older than you think. So does he take a peek back at the NFL? Does NFL take a peek back at him? I think, you know, the Raiders were mentioned in the Athletic report. I really think the Dolphins, if they lose this week, Stephen Ross has always had a shine. He tried to hire Harbaugh out of Stanford a couple of years ago. Stephen Ross, the Michigan Business School, is named after him. I do think the Dolphins, if Stephen Ross knows he could get him, that could affect the Dolphins' decision-making. And there's like a strong personal relationship there. And Ross wouldn't feel like he's as much taking Michigan, like, Harbaugh's had what he's called one of the great seasons in school history. So, and the program's not in some, you know, the program's in pretty good shape right now. It's the best shape it's been in a couple of years, probably since 16, 17, around then. So now, again, there's all these conflicted alma mater stuff. Would he do that? But I think that would certainly loom as another option. And the Bears are hard to tell just because no one really knows what's going to happen with their front office. So it's always hard to project who a coach is going to be when you don't know who's going to be hiring the coach. It will be interesting, but I mean, who would have thought a year ago we were talking about Jim Harbaugh as an NFL candidate when, you know, he entered this season as the face of the hot seat.
Harbaugh, he's never happy, whether that's a flaw or that's the reason for the success. So he's always fighting with somebody. That's why he burns hot. He runs guys out. He's not easy to be around. This is like the fifth place that's like, oh my God, right? He's always battling someone. There's no just like, you know, I think Coach William Christopher Sweeney wakes up most days like loving Clemson and happy with all the people and walking, you know, like walking. That's not Jim Harbaugh, right? Everything's got to be some kind of scrap. And so, yeah, he wears people out. He wears himself out. He doesn't know what's going on. Does he go? A couple things. When he started, this was about settling family business, righting the ship. You forget how bad they got. Brady Hoke, Rich Rodriguez combined to go 24-32 in the Big Ten. You can prop up some games as well. They were bad. It wasn't about beating Ohio State. It was about beating anybody. They were bad. He was supposed to come back. He wasn't going to come back to college. He was a pro coach. That was the big thing. Why would Jim Harbaugh leave the pros? Talk about the Super Bowl he almost won. I mean, that was a goal line stand by Baltimore to stop him. That was one of the most crushing losses to his brother, right? You get. The year prior, lost in the NFC Championship game when Richard Sherman batted away one of the greatest plays you'll ever see by a cornerback, batted away at the end of the game. Otherwise, they go to the Super Bowl that year. Seattle wins easy, okay? The year after he made the Super Bowl, they lose in overtime to the Giants in the NFC Championship game. And the Giants go on to win the Super Bowl. So you can't get much closer. Five playoff wins is a ton for an NFL coach. Three conference championship games and one Super Bowl. So does he want to go back and settle that? Because I think Jim Harbaugh is, of all the people, knows this is, like he said, this is one of the greatest seasons in Michigan history. It is. This is what Michigan is. They never win national championships. They're never number one. What they are is really, really good and consistently good. And he has got them that. He won them their Big Ten. He beat Ohio State. Check it off. I can go now. And so I think there's a big difference now. If that had happened a couple years ago, he may not still be there. I think that part is real. The other thing, and we talk about NIL, transfer portal, all this stuff. This is a totally different job than he took 7 years ago,
yep.
Right? It was like, come back to college, hang out in your hometown in Ann Arbor. Everyone loves you. All your friends, your alums, do some recruiting, coach them. I remember him saying it's not that much different than the pros, all this different stuff. Now it's like he just added a million things that I don't want to deal with. And it's like, I'll go to the Bears, right? Like this is now all sorts of complications. So I don't know. I think he could absolutely go if somebody wants him. Mike Hart was interesting because when he was a player, he stated as a player, I want to be the Michigan head coach. I remember being like, wow, that's really interesting and forward thinking because you never hear that from a player. Like, I'm going to be the head coach here someday. I don't know if he gets it. I would agree. You go Luke Fickle and you go, dude, really? You're going to care that much?
Right.
You're going to agree with that?
Take off your scarlet and gray underwear. I mean, like, that's, I would say, like, if you could get Luke Fickle, go get Luke Fickle. Absolutely. I think that's the no-brainer number one
Luke
choice.
If Luke Fickle is going to be, like, that loyal to Ohio State, like, all right. But, man, this is a great job now, and you could kill it. We talked about Bill O'Brien. Like, I don't understand everyone's hate of Bill O'Brien. Like, the guy was good at Penn State. He was good with the Texans. He was a bad GM. He got in a fight with DeAndre Hopkins. Like, these things don't – this is not – there's no translation, you know? 2 years ago this weekend, he led Patrick Mahomes 24-0 in a playoff game. And they blew it, and the whole thing's collapsed on Bill O'Brien. Bill O'Brien be good? I don't know. We'll see. But it's got to open first. But anyway, Michigan could be very, very interesting. And we'll see if they dip in, you know, do the Bears – go for anybody else in the college ranks. We'll see. All right. Let's get to these title games, right? Oh, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way.
Some football.
Sully's got this. The TV ratings weren't tremendous for the semis. I mean, what do you want? It's New Year's Eve and there are blowouts.
Mid-afternoon on a weekday.
Yeah. I mean, 16 million tuning in is pretty good, actually, considering they do everything they can so you won't watch. And we still watch. So, you know, whatever. Hopefully this never happens again. It's not planning on it. George Kliakoff, Pac-12 commissioner, was on the John Canzano show in Portland, basically saying he thinks we're stuck with this until the contract ends. He kind of threw water on the idea that there would be any kind of compromise before. He wants one, but here we are, I guess. I'll give him also credit. He leans into the 0-5 in the bowls, and we were terrible this year.
Yeah, no, he was very upfront about that.
So that's good.
He also said they had a terrible regular season too. He just wasn't limited to a postseason.
He did not spin that much at all.
Got down to the X's and O's too. He's like, we're down in the trenches right now. You know, it was true.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Wasn't one of these. Well, we have quality kids though, and we're developing leaders for tomorrow and all that. So, I don't know where we'll be with the playoff. We'll see. They are expected to get together all the grand poobahs in Indianapolis this weekend, at least informally. I don't know if there's a set meeting or whatever. We'll see. Maybe the sheer fact that a bunch of Alabama and Georgia fans are chanting SEC through the heart of the Midwest will spur change. I don't know. But let's get to this. We saw this game almost a month ago?
Yeah, five weeks.
Bama 41, Georgia 24. Game was dominated by Bryce Young, 26 of 44, 421 passes, passing yards, 3 TDs passing, a rushing TD. Stetson Bennett was through 3 TDs, but had a big pick. You know, Saban is 24-1 against former assistants, which Kirby Smart is. Only Jimbo Fisher has beat him. Thoughts going into this game? I mean, this is going to get broken down a million ways, but just what are you focused on going into this game here?
My focus is George's ability to affect Bryce Young. I think that's going to be not everything, but a huge, huge thing. They had zero sacks of Young when they played in the SEC championship game. It's the only game all year Georgia did not record a sack. They had, I think, 42 of them on the season, and they lit up Michigan's quarterbacks. They've lit up every quarterback. They couldn't light up him, and that's partly due to the fact that Young is a superb athlete who could maneuver out of trouble a lot of times. But it's also due to the fact that while they blitzed some, they didn't throw a lot necessarily at him. I think they were more concerned about trying to bracket both wide receivers, Jameson Williams and John Metchie, because they were concerned that their corners were the weak link, and they are the weak link, although Darian Kendrick played awfully well against Michigan. Now, you've only got one of those two wide receivers to deal with, so I think you can be a little bit more hell-bent on getting to the quarterback up front, and so I would expect them to throw much more at Young in that respect. And like, Bryce Young was brilliant in that game. I mean, he was awesome. I got to see him do it again, because that was, I thought, by far the best game I've seen him play. He was really good against like New Mexico State and Southern Miss, and he was very good against Arkansas. I mean, he had a great season, but I also saw him struggle for 58 minutes against Auburn and struggle against LSU and struggle against Tennessee and at times struggle against Texas A&M. And if I'm Georgia, I'm saying, man, our defense is better than them. And our defense is better than it showed, and we're going to go out and show it. We're going to play physical, and we are going to get after the quarterback, and then we'll see if they can possibly replicate that performance.
Well, Pat stole my number one talking point.
That's pretty much everybody's talking point. Yeah.
I mean. So I will say this. What I did one of these I'm doing one of these stories for Yahoo later in the week where I talked to a bunch of coaches who played both teams, and they break it down. And I'm going to attempt to go a little bit outside my comfort zone here, because I thought the best point came from an SEC DC who watched the SEC championship and then the semis. So Georgia runs what's called simulated pressures, right? And we've talked a little bit about these on the pod. They are basically, if you rush somebody from like linebacker, for example, your defensive end drops into coverage, right? So you're not actually giving up a numeric advantage. You're just sort of taking one from, you know, if you send in a rusher, you send somebody else out. This coach thought that they were tipping their hand defensively when they were going to run simulated pressures, which meant they were going to play zone. And he felt like the combination of the lack of pass rush, which Pat brought up, combined with pre-snap tipping through pre-snap motions, gave Bryce Young just a very clear picture of what to expect. And what we saw from him in that game is he was very comfortable and he knew exactly where to go. And that the simulated pressures became predictable, and it gave Bryce Young a chance to pick apart the defense like he did. The other thing the simulated pressures do is Auburn's success came on the edge. When you really look at what Auburn did to Alabama to affect that game and to slow them down, they had dominant edge rushers. Some of Georgia was sending those ends back into coverage, took away potential edge advantages. The right tackle has been the weakness for Alabama all season, and they maybe didn't take as much advantage of that because they're running simulated pressures. Okay, again, this is sort of a combination of conversations with a bunch of coaches who watched this game. So you wonder if perhaps Georgia tries to go a little bit more mano-mano and keeps the pressure on the edges and maybe does a little less simulated pressure, especially if they feel like Alabama can figure out what they're going to do pre-snap. So that chess match and how they figure out how to generate pressure becomes, you know, the focal point of the game. We'll all be watching. And then it's your guy, Stetson Bennett, Dan, the law firm. Will Sully be able to hang in like he did against Michigan? I mean, he picked Michigan apart over the top, underneath, with his legs. He was dynamic. Does he transcend game manager, and can he hang in the pocket with Will Anderson barreling down on him and figure out a way to pull out a win?
Big deal. They beat Michigan with those quick passes to the side. I think Alabama's going to tackle in space better. And, you know, we'll see. But this is very much a coaching matchup. Like, this is very much, I mean, what does Stetson Bennett do? I guess we can go, we can move right to picking them. But I mean, my thing with this is like, you go into the game, who's got the best, who's got the better quarterback? Alabama. Who's got the best player in the field? Will Anderson, Alabama. Who's got the best coach? Alabama. Who won the last time? Alabama. I keep trying to talk myself into Georgia. I try to, and then who do I never, who am I supposed to never pick against? Alabama. All right. Stetson Bennett's going to do this. It's going to be an amazing story if he doesn't. It's going to be an amazing story that in this era of five star upon five star upon five star upon Alabama needs another receiver, we'll take another star from Ohio State, transfer over, that this guy, a former walk-on who Pat's great story about him, had half a locker when he showed up. And somebody said he actually visited UMass to go play for UMass. Like, that's so bad. I don't know if that's true. This guy, who everyone said isn't good enough, including me, wins it. It's going to be a great, great story. Like, it's, and as someone who roots for stories, I'm good with that. I'm not one of these, like some of these guys on TV get really upset when they're like, predictions don't work. I can care less. Like, I said he was great, you know. I don't care. Yeah. If he does it, unbelievable. He will go down as an all-time legend. I think there is enormous pressure. I feel like the Georgia fans are just in panic right now. It's been 41 years.
1980.
Which is a whole different era. And worse, I think, I was on down with Ryan Brown and the guys down in Birmingham this morning on the radio or their show. If you're a Georgia fan, not only have you not won it in 41 years, but everybody else has won it. Clemson's won it. Tennessee's won it. Florida. Georgia Tech's won it. Yeah. Florida, Auburn, Alabama. You're damn surrounded by these guys. Your neighbors are all had the national title. Plus a bunch lately in Clemson, Bama, and Auburn. And you're just like, when's our turn? And if it's not this year, when? Now, the way they're recruiting, the way Kirby is a good coach, they're going to get enough swings at the bat. They're going to win one of these eventually. It's like that, those great basketball teams where the great basketball coach, it's like when you're going to make the Final Four, or the golfer, when you're going to win your first major. It's going to happen. But man, is it going to hurt if it isn't Monday night?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so those are the storylines, non-technical. You talked earlier about how all the oxygen's on Caleb Williams and Jim Harbaugh and all this stuff. It is. I think fans are excited to watch this game purely for the game. I think the neutral fan is like, all right, these are the two best teams I want to watch. But there's not those compelling story. Like, Kirby Smart is not, like, he's not this beloved coach. Like, he's like, I don't think, like, I think he's a good coach, but I don't think you look at him and be like, oh, he's a lovable, huggable guy. Like, there's not a soap opera in this. They're not fighting with each other, the schools. You're not having a conference rivalry. The biggest controversy is a bunch of Bama and Georgia fans bitching it's going to be cold in Indiana. Like, so I think people are excited to watch the actual football game.
I mean, I think the, you know, if you're looking for storyline beyond matchup, it's just the fact that Alabama's absolutely tortured the hell out of Georgia. You know, I mean, and Smart coached under Saban and was brought to Georgia to do what Saban did, and he has, except Saban's still there and still in the way. And so that's the issue there. And, I mean, they have played four times before this with Smart against Saban, and every single game Georgia has led, sometimes in almost commanding fashion. At some point in time, and every one of them, it looked like, oh, Georgia's got this. And then every single time, Alabama regroups and wins. And, you know, you go back, obviously the Tua bomb is unparalleled in terms of that rivalry of just like gut punch. But still, Jalen Hurts comes off the bench to beat you in the SEC championship game. And then this year, you're up 10-0 and you've kind of got them on skates. And then you have the massive coverage bust and Jameson Williams scores and everything flips around. When Georgia was sure they were going to win and Georgia's fans were sure they were going to win in Atlanta and they had more fans there, that was a hard one too. So that to me is the other interesting part of this, just how tortured is Georgia's psyche just at the very sight of Nick Saban and Alabama.
The Tua bomb is a little bit like the JT Barrett fourth down is for Michigan, Ohio State. Like, if that Tua bomb is incomplete, and I believe that was on third and 18.
Second and 26, I believe.
Second and 26. Second and 26.
So then you're third and 26. You probably don't score. So, and again, the two Obamas to Devonta Smith, some, you know, unknown, you know, whatever happened to that guy, right? So
backup QB, little tiny undersized receiver, just a couple
freshman receiver, yeah,
couple scrappers, yeah,
yeah. And I really think that yes, the I wrote about this going into the SEC title game. There is a little bit of like Red Sox, Cubs, Rangers from the 90s. There is a little bit of like Georgia is that tortured fan base. It's a place that, because of the passion, because of the local recruiting base, should be better than it's been. If you look back to the last 40 years of Georgia football, they should have won a national title. Even Tennessee figured out how to do it, right, Sully? So it should be a little bit better. Another point I thought that was interesting when you line these two up right now is one coach put it to me this way. He said, Alabama has the three best players in this game, all right? They have Bryce Young. They have Jameson Williams. They have Will Anderson, who's probably the best player in the game, to be honest. And then from there, Georgia probably has like most of 4-12, right? Like, again, I'm sure somebody smarter than us can go through and draft them all and figure it out. But like, Georgia has more high-end talent. Alabama has the highest-end talent. And that's the fundamental tension of this game. Can Georgia make the sum of their more talented team to be better than to build up and reflect the parts? And I think if there's been, and I have not been that critical of Kirby Smart. He's been made some mistakes, but I feel like if you really look at the body of work and where he's pulled the program from, he's done an excellent job overall. But has Georgia always been better than the sum of its parts? And, you know, there's moments where they have not been. You look back at like a loss to South Carolina here, and you look at some of these Alabama games, like they probably should have won one of these games somewhere along the line. And so I do think the psyche of Kirby is an interesting storyline as you push forward, because he has built a monster, recruited like crazy, and they have elite. N'Kobe Dean is an elite player. They have wonderful. I mean, Jordan Davis is an elite player. They have just talented dudes oozing around the field. Their backups are talented dudes. So, yeah, I'm excited. I think it's going to be a heck of a football game. But I do understand a little bit why the buildup is muted. Like, we saw it 3 weeks ago. These are teams that there aren't a ton of fresh stories about. And then there's just a lot of stuff going on, too. And there's like an awkward, you know, like the Texas Bowl gets played. There's just like an awkward period of time. There's not like an organic buildup like the Super Bowl has, where that's the show for either a week or 2 weeks.
And the NFL sucks a ton of attention out of, I mean, you know, it's just a really big deal on college football podcasts and radio shows in certain markets. But like, if you go to LA or Chicago or New York or Boston, like they're just not, even Detroit, they're not talking about college football right now.
Yeah, I did something on WFAN last week, the day of the Orange Bowl on New Year's Eve. And then they were like, oh, we're just going to take a break here to talk about college football. Huh, what a little, you know, that is like very niche. Yeah, we're kind of interested, but not really. Are these guys NFL prospects or not? Was right. Basically.
All right. Antonio Brown is setting the world on fire. Yeah. Everyone wants that. So, all right. So let's make our picks here.
Okay.
This will be the final game, unless we, well, you know what? Let's pick the SCS title game anyway. I have assured victory in the bowl challenge. I am the national champion.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. Never bet bowls, people. Never bet bowls.
Bet them. I'm 20-14 and one.
Basically, champion. A Helms Foundation 1920s national championship you're declaring.
No. Expand the playoff and give me a chance to come back and look what happened.
1950 Kentucky guys, banner.
You guys want these old, only two teams get in, only two teams. Nah. We got hot at the right time. We're like the 9-7 Giants beating the 18-0 Patriots.
Oh, my God.
Don't worry about it. Champion. What do you call Michael Strahan? What do you call him?
End up at for that gross Texas
call Michael
bowl.
Strahan a morning talk show
You host. Call him a Super Bowl champion. What do you call Eli Manning? Super Bowl champion. Don't worry about that little regular season. David Tyree, Super Bowl champion. Me, national champ.
Me.
Sully, what did the line end up on that LSU K-State game?
Oh, it was -9 K-State by the end of it.
Okay.
Boy,
yeah.
Should have been -20.
I don't bet, but that was an opportunity to make some money.
Yes.
they're running a high school offense. Like poorly, by the way, too.
All right. Also, so the big event from that game was Brian Kelly doing an interview during the game.
Yeah.
Where Tim Hasselbeck made fun of his accent, and Burke Kelly, I think, was trying to own it, trying to do the whole family thing. He then said, we don't have strong accents in Boston. Now, people flipped out because, of course, that's absolutely nuts. I had to literally learn how to re-talk as an adult. I just learned how to speak. I had the worst Boston accent. I got made fun of for my Boston accent at the University of Massachusetts. That's how bad the accent was. I then took a job as a newspaper reporter for the old Indianapolis News, and I was out on the streets, and I could not, we were not talking the same language. I had to learn to speak again.
You needed a translator at the Noodle to order a Guinness?
It was a disaster. I was a police reporter. I was out like interviewing people after fires in their house. They'd be like, what? Like, I was awful. This would have been hysterical. I was just, it was not going well. They never should have hired me because I didn't speak English. Certainly didn't speak Hoosier.
I do think Brian Kelly is being sarcastic, by the way. Yeah, like Brian Kelly, if he's nothing else, he is relentlessly sarcastic.
He was trying to be funny. It was a joke.
It was good.
He's just terrible at it.
He's bad jokes, but it's like, this is what happens on social media. Like, if you're not in the cool kid club, you're just like, oh, looking at what an idiot, carpet bag. It's like, come on, man. Like, I'm sorry, you know, like, why are we hating Brian Kelly again? Like, what? I don't get the memos. Is there a memo? Can I get on the mailing list, the newsletter in the morning, or my email?
Who you should be nice to and who you should be mean to? Yeah.
I mean, this was obviously a joke. He was joking with another guy from Boston about it. I was like, come on. It's just like, I don't know. That's why I try to stay off of that stuff. But like, you go on Twitter and it's just, I mean, you would have thought I don't know what you would have thought. Not, that was a little over the top. But anyway. Vengeful. Sully, you were probably piling on, weren't you?
Yes.
Yeah. See, you're mean.
Yep.
Can we be nicer, Sully?
I mean, how do you like them apples? It's a pretty famous quote. I mean, come on. That's a layup.
I assure you, anyone from Everett who went to St. John's Prep is well aware of the accent.
Oh, yeah. It's still funny.
He's the son of a Chelsea alderman.
Nobody growing up in Boston didn't know they had an accent.
Well, they just think it's the accent, so there is no accent.
Yeah, but then you leave and you're like, holy sh-, like, he had to learn. He went, you go like, I can imagine him trying to recruit in Grand Valley State at the time. Like, I got to learn. He did the same thing I did. He stopped talking like it. All right. Montana State versus North Dakota State. Noon, ESPN2. NDSU giving 7.5. 1/16th of all NFL starting quarterbacks on Sunday were from NDSU. Bison have won 8 of the last 10 title games. Break up the Bison. Are they ruining the sport like Nick Saban? I don't know.
Is Gino Auriemma the coach?
John Wooden is up there. No one knows. No one's actually seen them play. Montana State's got a great story. Freshman quarterback Tommy Mellett is from Butte, Montana. Local kid. They call him Touchdown Tommy. Can he bring it home for Montana State?
Butte's supposed to have an unbelievable St. Patrick's Day. Like a bunch of Irish went out there. Butte's supposed to really get after it on St. Patrick's.
You guys are saying this like it's common knowledge.
It's true.
Butte's Butte rocks been to Butte. On St. Patrick's Day. What?
Hold on now. I have been to Butte. Vastly underrated drinking town. Not even rated. They got like 700 bars in Butte. Go to Butte. Okay. It's just a little, I mean, everything's
I've
a little
I've been to Bozeman. I've been to Billings, but I have not been to Butte. I haven't covered my 3 B's of Montana yet.
Drive into Butte. Apparently, they just have like these bars from when the guys came out of the mines and just drank like got miners coming out of the mines, right? Yeah. It's like the Wild West. They have like 1,000 bars in Butte. It's like,
it's literally the Wild West.
Yeah. It's like, it's like Vegas popped up in the middle. Like,
I watched the local TV's package where they interviewed a local bar owner, and he was exactly what you would think a local bar owner from Butte looked like. And he was like, "Oh yeah, Touchdown Tommy. I don't want to put the pressure on him, but you know, build the statue."
All right.
There were over 50 bars in Butte, Montana.
Really?
Yeah, how many people live
travel,
there?
I'm going to find that out.
Wow, 34,000 people live in Butte, Montana.
That's got to be up there with Athens, bars. Georgia for 50 bars per capita.
7,000 per bar. That's pretty good per capita.
This is per visit Butte. There's a tough job, man.
Billings only has 109,000 people. I would have just thought it was a little bigger.
Or 700, I should say. 700. One bar for 700.
There's one street that's like crazy. I don't know. Probably Main Street or Butte Street. I don't know. Anyway, don't sleep on Butte.
Okay. All right.
All you, I want to hear from the Butte people. Tell me how good it is. I think I was at the Silver Dollar maybe or something. I don't know.
We've been told.
Well, I'm sure a few of the 32,000 Butte residents listen to the pod. So
I think we're big in Butte. Big in Butte.
Yeah.
Listen, if there's a secret place to get hammered in this country, I found it. Okay.
That's your biggest contribution to mankind and to podkind right there.
That's all I got. I can't really tell you.
Bar recommendations for everyone, no matter where they go.
I had nothing to say when Pete was breaking down the pass rush.
The only simulated pressure you have is when you can't get to the bar and you need a drink.
All right. I want somebody send me a picture of you drinking in Butte.
Yeah, we need that. We need that.
All right, Pat, who's going to win the game?
Well, it's Bison season. They always win. You said it 8 out of 10. I was asking before the pod if people are, you know, whining about them like people whine about Alabama, like they're ruining the sport. I don't know whether they do or not. But since my father's born and raised in North Dakota and I still have family in North Dakota, yes, I am sticking with the Bison to win and cover the 7 and the hook. Go NDSU.
Yeah, I feel like Montana State's a little bit of a Cinderella story this year. They've had an unbelievable season. Brent Vegan, who was Carson Wentz's OC and quarterback coach for part of his time at North Dakota State, has just gone there from Wyoming last year and really done a great job, juicing up that program and getting to this point. I just don't think they have the personnel to overtake the Bison. But I will be curious to see. What we really need from people is it's a 10 a.m. kick. Montana time. Ooh. On Saturday. So what we really want is some 9:30 a.m. Butte bar picks to show up in our Twitter timelines.
Yeah. It's an 11 a.m. kick, right? In North Dakota time, but 10 a.m.
Mountain time. It's 10 a.m.
All right. Two things. Montana State is not in Butte, but I'm sure they'll be rooting
correct.
For Montana.
Yeah. But for Touchdown Tommy.
Touchdown Tommy. And Fargo is a hell of a drinking town too. So let's not like the Fargo people. They're gonna buck up on this and go, wait a minute now. I mean, it's freezing up there. What else you got to do? I mean,
that's what you have to do.
That's what you have to do. God, I love it. I'd like to be in Fargo this weekend. The only person who'd say that. Anyway, I am not going to take Touchdown Tommy. Go get him. But I'm not stupid. I'm betting NDSU. Simple as that. They win every year. Go with it. Someone has to dismantle the program. It's the way SEC boosters should have all the schools in the SEC should have piled in like $20 million each and paid Nick Saban, I guess that would have been $220 million or something, to retire like 10 years ago. Yeah, just pay him to never coach again. Go away. And think about how much defensive coordinator buyout money you would have saved. Like, you guys are doing this NIL thing wrong. Somebody NIL Nick Saban to go retire.
Yeah, if they would have paid off Saban to go away, so what, 6-7 years ago, there'd be 3 or 4 more national titles for someone else in the SEC.
Yeah, yeah. You want to win? Get that guy out. All right, yep. Sully, who you picking?
This is like the Bourbon Bowl, the 1999 Bourbon Bowl, where Coach Klein had the playbook. Brent Vigen doesn't have the water boy, but he's got Touchdown Tommy. I'm taking the underdog. Let's go, Bobcats. I believe in you. It's going to be a low-scoring game, too. Very similar teams, defense, run the ball, that type of thing. So cover, Bobcats. Come on.
Title game. Georgia given 3. Over-under is 51.5 on BetMGM. Bama, 8-6 against the spread. Georgia, 9-5 against the spread. I'll say this. Everyone got chapped when somebody – remember, it was like – you pick against Bama, and remember, and then they beat Georgia, and everyone went crazy. Like, their fans went bananas. How could you pick against Bama? It's because you lost 6 times against the spread this year.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, I mean, if I only pick you, I'm 2 over .500. Someone like me who's 20-14, no, you can't just have that kind of great pickers like me. I can't
great
have it.
Great pickers like you.
Georgia, 9-5 against the spread. Pete, who you got?
I'm going to go Georgia. Despite Dan's very, very straightforward argument for Alabama, which is they beat them last time. You never pick against Alabama. Kirby's 0-4. I just think the totality of Georgia's talent will allow them to kind of go haymaker for haymaker with Alabama this time around. I have more faith in Stetson Bennett than most on this podcast. Maybe not as much as Pat, but more than the others. And I really do think that the loss to Alabama recentered Georgia in a way that's going to have them really ready for this game. And I'd be stunned if they went and did not sack Bryce Young this time. Georgia can't get behind because they're not built to come from behind. And look, they got ahead last game. It didn't do them much good. I really feel like I agree with Vegas. I think it's going to be a close game. I think Georgia wins 23-20.
Yeah, pretty low scoring. I agree. I mean, I was going to say like 24-20 because the spread, I think, is 3. So I'm taking Georgia to cover. Look, it's going to be a tough man contest. It's going to be great players against great players who pound each other. And I think it's going to be a little bit more of a phone booth game than the last one was, which became a little more spread out track meet sort of game. But, you know, like digressing just for a moment, but what Georgia did to Michigan physically, if you saw the number of clips of them just obliterating people, knocking them to the ground, holy crap, Michigan. Get in the weight room. And that's not to say you're weak. That's just how strong Georgia is. But if you want to compete with those guys, you got to not have your linemen just getting absolutely obliterated. It's not going to – Georgia and Alabama, one of them's not going to obliterate the other, but they will absolutely hammer one another. I talking to the Georgia people that day after the game at the SEC championship, they came out and they were like – they were pissed. But they were like, okay, our season's not over. We're going to come back right back at him. We are not going out like this. And so I think that there was a real determination to figure out what went wrong, get better from that. And I look at a Georgia team that's played 13 really damn good games and one crappy one. I just look at Alabama. I think they've played more crappy games and fewer great games. I think the tables get turned, and I'm taking the dogs here.
Beautiful. Thank you guys for letting me pick Bama. This is amazing. I mean, they just played a month ago and Bama blew them out. Yes, Kirby Smart has a month to fix the bugaboos that they had in that SEC title game. But Bama, they also have had a long time to game plan and counteract the pressure that Georgia is going to bring. So, yeah, give me Bryce Young. Give me Will Anderson. Give me the 3 points.
Best coach, best player, best quarterback. Beat him last time. They always win, and I'm getting 3 points. No problem. Roll Tide.
Also, the over the last 4 times these guys have played has hit 3 times over this number. So it might be a low scoring slog, but historically it hasn't between these two.
What's the number, Sully?
51.5.
51.5? We'll see. I'll stick with the under.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good. Going to be a good one. All right. Well, we'll be back after that game to break it down. Here on the pod, we hope everyone has a good weekend and can't wait for it. We will appreciate everybody subscribing. Stick with us this off season. It's as fun as ever. We never don't have a good time. There's plenty. Everyone's like, what do you talk about in the off season? Like, do you follow this sport?
Yeah, there's constant mayhem.
We literally will be sitting there in May. There's usually like one pod a year. We're like, boy, not much going on today. Like, it's like June 4th or something. Like, every other time, it's like, we can't get to all this stuff. Right. So stick with us. We appreciate it. We had incredible growth this year. Pod's done great, and we can't do it without you. We have a lot of fun doing it. It's a highlight of most of our weeks. These guys don't really have very good lives. I have other things, but it's one of the better parts of my week. But
Spending time with you is the highlight of Pat and I's week. It's Sully's.
Yes, it should be. Should be.
Thank you for gracing us with your presence.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Part of the job, but you're welcome. All right. Talk to you later.